From the Land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of March 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, Matt Bennett from TGM in Windsor will be here to take up the cash grain market. Along the way, we'll hear an update of agricultural news from your Director of Ag Programming, Dave Dickey. Check in on what's happening in Lisa Brault's backyard. And finally, get an update of the agricultural weather forecast from Pete Levitt. And it all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
We would like to thank these businesses for helping to make our 22nd annual All-Day Ag Outlook meeting in Covington a great success. Risk Management Commodities, Farm Credit Services, and Steel Star Metal Roofing and Siding. We look forward to seeing you all again next year.
Checking the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon. Futures in the soft red winter wheat pit finished lower. The nearby March contract at $6.30.5, down 2.5 cents. May at $6.34.75, 4.5 lower. And July at $6.45.75, down 4.75. The hard red in Kansas City settled the harvest month July at $6.86.5, down 6 cents. March corn futures for the day, a gain of a penny and a quarter to settle at $6.45. May futures at $6.35.5, a loss, down 3.25 cents. July down 3 cents as well, $6.37. September at $5.90, up a half. And the December futures at $5.57.25, 0.75 cents lower. March contract of next year at $5.67.75 in the corn pit, down a penny and a quarter. March soybean futures, $13.32.5, up 11 for the day. May at $13.38.5, 11.75 higher. July, $13.44.75, up 11.25 in the August contract. $13.36.5, 10.75 higher. November futures, $12.96, up 4.5. And bean meal at $3.63.20 in Chicago for the products, up $2.30. Bean oil at $53.02, 41 cents higher. The Mercantile Exchange June live cattle at $124.50, $1.25 higher. The August at $126.75, up 55 cents. The April feeder cattle at $157.47.5, up $1 and a nickel. And the May futures at $158.57.5, up 97 and a half cents. May lean hogs, $96.20, up 47 and a half. And June were unchanged at $95.55. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby contract in the crude oil at $106.85 a barrel, up 67 cents. Ethanol at $2.24.6, 2/10 of a cent lower. Natural gas at $2.27.7, down 2.5 cents. And the heating oil or diesel fuel, 5 6/10 of a cent higher at $3.27.5. Gold futures on the day, $1,698.10 an ounce, up $14.80 on a settlement price, and the dollar at 79.15 is down to 0.55. The CRB index at 316.02, that's up 1.78 on the day. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon says we'll see partly sunny skies, a high of 43 degrees. It'll be breezy with a northwest wind at 13 to 21, gusting to 29 this afternoon. Tonight, mostly clear, and a low of 30 degrees. A west-northwest wind at 8 to 10 miles an hour, gusting to 15 miles an hour. Tomorrow, sunny skies, a high of 46 with a north-northwest wind at 10 to 17. And Friday night, mostly clear, a low of 28. Saturday, sunny and a high of 55. Saturday night, a 30% chance of showers. It'll be mostly cloudy, of course, a low of 41 degrees. And on Sunday, showers are likely. Cloudy in the area of Urbana-Champaign with a high of 55 degrees. The chance of rainfall set at 60%. Sunday night, showers likely, mostly cloudy, a low of 47. And Monday, sunny skies, a high of 63 degrees. Monday night, a chance of showers and cloudy, a low of 50. Tuesday, sunny and 70. Did you hear that? Tuesday, partly sunny and 70. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy and 51. Wednesday, partly sunny and a high of 69 degrees. Looks like a great few days in front of us as we make our way through the month of March. More on the weather forecast when we get closer to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On the phone line with us to take a look at the agricultural futures markets, Dan Zwicker at ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Hey, thanks so much for making your way Tuesday to the all-day agricultural outlook event and the beef house in Covington, Indiana. It was a really good day. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
I sure do. It's you get to see people that you haven't seen for a year. A lot of times you talk to them on the phone, but actual seeing them in live in person is a fun time.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. Hey, so as you look forward to tomorrow morning's World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, it'll be out from USDA at 7:30. What do you think the big number will be?
Well, I think everybody's probably got their eyes on soybeans because soybeans have been the commodity that's been basically grinding higher almost every day. We'd have a down day, but then we'd have several up days. So we have been grinding higher on soybeans. So I think that's going to be the big thing, what happens to the South American crop and then where they throw that demands at. My guess is that you're going to see some improvement in export demand on this year's balance sheet, but probably more so for the coming year, and that's not necessarily going to be released. USDA really don't officially release new crop supply-demand tables other than that outlook, which is a guesstimate. They wait usually till that April-May time frame before they start giving us some new crop. But beans are definitely marching higher. They're on the move. I think they smell that corn acres are going to be big here in the U.S., and in order to get the farmers' attention, they need to climb higher. As I kind of talked about there in the beef house, if you look at the corn-soybean ratio, about every 5 years you have a low, and over the fall and winter months, corn has been the most profitable over soybeans since back in 2006 and again back in 2000. So that's why the trade is looking for a big shift to corn acres, and that's basically why you get the feel when you're out in the field talking to farmers that they are going, that their intentions anyway is to plant more corn. I think longer term, you got 2.5 years of beans gaining on corn, and usually that ratio tops out anywhere between 325 and 350. So we're sitting at 2-1 now, so we got a long ways to go to improve beans over corn.
If this comes to fruition the way you think, so that we would be planting a whole bunch of corn acres, 94 million acres or better, I think, in your opinion, what does it tell you about both the price of corn and soybeans under normal growing conditions?
Well, I'm not in a real bearish camp on corn. I do think, though, that, you know, from $5 futures is probably more the bottom end of the range than $4. I know there's people wanting to talk $4 futures as the bottom end of the range. I'm not necessarily in that camp. I think depending upon how big a crop we have, I mean, it's one thing having the intentions, and the other thing is that getting the actual planted, and then the next step then is getting it harvested. So we do have a long ways to go, and whether or not my thinking will be reflected in USDA's report or not, who knows. My feel of walking across the Corn Belt this winter is that the intentions are quite high. There's been a lot of pasture ground tore up with the intentions of going into corn. Then there's a lot of acres that didn't get planted last year to corn that's going to go to corn. So I do think the intentions number could be at 95 or above. Whether or not USDA announces that, my guess is as good as yours on that one. I think the soybean ratio tells you that there's a big jump in corn acres, and I think that's why soybeans are rallying to try to pull that back some, because with the shortfall in South America, if we don't get a larger soybean plantings, soybeans could be very, very tight the next year, next marketing year, and I think that's why soybeans keep creeping higher here on us.
Can you turn your attention to the wheat market at this point? Because we were down, I think, in December in the lead option with a low of about 567 or what now, trading not quite 75 cents above that or something along those lines. But it's been a pretty good rally. Is there any concern that the Northern Hemisphere wheat crop might struggle through the rest of this production season? One of the meteorologists we talked to tells us it's awful dry in many of the growing regions.
Well, it is. I was in Kansas a couple weeks ago when you talked to me. I was in the Panhandle, I think, that Thursday afternoon, and you can definitely tell the difference when you're in southern Kansas versus northern Kansas. It's pretty well split in half. Northern Kansas has got a lot of green wheat. Southern Kansas, a lot of farmers just planted the seed just to see if it would catch and grow, and then they probably plan on putting some top dressing on it this spring here to get it to go. They didn't want to waste their money on putting fertilizer on last fall until they could see whether or not it would germinate. A lot of those areas did get some moisture, so we do see some germination. But you go down the road, you see one good field and then a tough field and a good field and a tough field. And right, the Panhandle is the Texas Panhandle is extremely dry. They tell me basically they're going to plant cotton in that area because it takes less water than a feed grain crop. But then when you get up into the Dakotas, especially South Dakota, where you'll probably see more corn acres, farmers tell me that the drier it is in that area, the more likely they're going to plant corn and collect crop insurance settlements on that rather than plant spring wheat. So we may not have the spring wheat acres than what we normally would. A lot of it depends upon whether or not we get any moisture up into those areas. But chart-wise, I think today's action is a warning sign. We have been in a sideways to higher climb in wheat. We did kind of bust underneath the uptrending line, a three-point uptrending line. Seasonally, this is the time of year wheat really begins to descent into a fall low. Usually have a lot of times you have a February high point, and then you just kind of roll over and drift on down into the summer months. Whether or not that's the case this year or not, we'll have to kind of wait and see on that. But there's a lot of rough spots. The weather pattern, I think one of the reasons why the corn's getting hit so hard, especially old crop corn, is it's the expectations that we're going to see some early plantings and we're going to see some early harvest. And therefore, we'll bring in some of next year's corn into the current marketing year, and therefore, maybe we can get by with some tighter ending stock levels.
On that note, I'll let you go. Thank you so much, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon.
Support for Stock and Commodity Reports on Illinois Public Media comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, now hosting risk management seminars. A complete list of seminars is at sfarmmarketing.com.
Your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey, is here now with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the House Agriculture Committee is planning to stick to a cut of $23 billion over 10 years in the next farm bill, as on Wednesday it approved a letter to the House Budget Committee chairman on fiscal year 2013 budget priorities that says its, quote, main focus will be reauthorization of the farm bill that expires on September 30th. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Frank Lucas, a Republican from Oklahoma, and Ranking Member Colin Peterson, a Democrat from Minnesota, both signed the letter. The letter also notes that the committee has scheduled field hearings and that it intends to hold another series of hearings in Washington this spring before holding a markup session on the farm bill. The United Nations FAO index today shows that global food prices rose in February from the previous month, driven by gains in grains, vegetable oils, and sugar. The index, which measures monthly price changes for a food basket of cereals, oil seeds, dairy, meat, and sugar, averaged 215.3 points in February, up from a revised 212.8 points in January. The FAO also says it expects world wheat output this year to fall 1.4% from last year's record crop of 690 million tons. Australian officials say that the U.S. may become the world's top beef exporter in 2012 as a drought forces farmers to slaughter more cattle, passing Australia, where a strong currency is making the country's meat more expensive. Australia's exports of meat are estimated to rise marginally to 1.44 million tons in 2012 from 1.4 million tons shipped last year. According to the USDA, Australia was the biggest exporter of beef in 2011, followed by Brazil, and the United States was third. Smithfield Foods reported a better-than-expected quarterly profit, helped by lower expenses, and signaled that the market for pork and hog production was strong. Live hog market prices rose 23%, while wholesale pork prices only rose 11%. Third quarter net income fell to $79 million, or 49 cents per share, from $202.6 million, or $1.21 per share a year earlier, hurt by higher raw material costs. And a U.S. envoy says talks on delivering food aid to North Korea made progress, though details still must be worked out. Special Envoy Robert King called the day and a half of talks with North Korean officials in Beijing productive, but did not announce an agreement yesterday. Instead, King says he will return to Washington to discuss the outcome and that both sides are still trying to resolve details on the food assistance. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in Lincoln Square Mall, featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois. More information is available on their website at www.commonground.coop.
Hi, this is Illinois Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, Lisa Brotz says a sure sign that spring is in the air is do-it-yourself fresh cheese in her latest edition of In My Backyard.
Spring is coming. It really is. And with spring come lambs and kids and calves. And with lambs and kids and calves comes milk. And milk is great, but it's really cheese made from that milk that I'm after. Once you go freshly made cow's milk mozzarella, it's kind of hard to go back. It's not exactly something you can crank out when suddenly visited by a craving for it either, but just made mozzarella cheese is actually possible for even the total cheese novice to make at home. With advanced preparation, some time to kill, and the right ingredients, even local in some cases, we can all make our own mozzarella. Well, so I've heard. Making mustard is one thing. Cheese? It seems much more complicated and requiring of considerable dedication. It doesn't seem to me like something I can just pick up and learn by checking a few books out of the library and watching some videos on YouTube. Instead, I want to find an actual person who has successfully made mozzarella more than once by themselves. A guru.
I'm a cheese nerd, cheese enthusiast, to say the least.
That's Brian McKay. He's one of the co-owners of Art Mart, a specialty housewares and grocery store in Urbana, but he's also into making fresh mozzarella and burrata cheese. It's not just about the cheese itself, he told me.
It combined everything that I loved. Science, history, chemistry, food, obviously, different kinds of food, all different genres of food, plus culture. And I don't mean that in the cheese way, but I mean actually a lot of cultural ways that cheese are made. And so it combined all of those things together. And so I became really fascinated with it.
Since doing some training in New York a couple of years ago, Brian's made a lot of fresh mozzarella and burrata, which is mozzarella cheese with a mozzarella and fresh cream filling. He likes to use milk from Kilgus Farms in Fairbury, Illinois, he says, because the milk isn't homogenized. He tells me that makes the cheesemaking process easier and brings out a better texture in the finished product. Good milk, sheep's rennet, some salt, cream, if you're making burrata, and some hot water are all you need to make cheese. When I go to visit Brian, he's making some burrata. He's already made the curd. That involves adding the rennet to the milk, waiting for it to separate, separating the curds from the whey, and then letting the curds drain for at least 24 hours through some cheesecloth.
So we dump out about two-thirds of the water.
While we're talking, he carefully pours hot water over the curd, which is cut into cubes, and then he adds more water to get it up to the right temperature, which is around 130 degrees. The idea is to get the cubes of curd to sort of melt together by stirring them together, but not too much. That'll make the cheese tough.
You can see how it's starting to kind of form together here.
Once the curd for the mozzarella is close to the right temperature, Brian makes some filling for the burrata by adding cream to plain curd and working it in. As soon as the filling's ready, Brian wraps some mozzarella around the burrata filling, creating these squat little balls of cheesy deliciousness.
All right, so I pull off little 3 to 4 inch long pieces and then kind of stretch those out under the hot water and turn them into little squares or rectangles, and then take probably an eighth of a cup or so, you know, a good forkful of the filling, and then fold it. It's a square, so you just kind of fold in all the corners and stretch your last corner over to seal it, and then put it just the bottom of it back into the hot water.
I'm not sure if I'll make my own mozzarella this spring. I probably need another lesson. Summer's coming, though. It really is. And with summer come tomatoes and basil. And with tomatoes and basil, well, nothing goes with them better than a nice ball of homemade mozzarella cheese. Stay tuned. This is Lisa Braltz for In My Backyard.
Lisa Braltz's stories can also be heard on our website, WILLAG.org. Click on the In My Backyard link in the right navigation window. And you can also read her occasional blogs at majorprogression.wordpress.com.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
On this Thursday afternoon, time to check the cash grain market. Matt Bennett of TGM and Windsor on the phone line. Hi, Matt. Tell me about basis in your area and how it's been reacting this week.
Well, really, this week we haven't seen a huge fluctuation in basis. We really, a couple of different rail lines, I guess we've seen a little bit of movement in the last couple of weeks. But for the most part, we haven't changed our local basis on corn or beans for cash or fall.
And when you look ahead, do you believe producers will plant a whole bunch of corn as predicted at this point? Or is the rise in soybean prices going to be enough to push them to plant soybeans later in the season?
Well, there's definitely several different factors there, but I do think that if soybeans can maintain the current charge that they've been leading here, then it's definitely going to make guys think a little bit, especially if we just don't have a really, really good planting time frame there in early April. You know, if guys can push corn acres, I think for the most part they're probably going to do it, but especially on the better ground.
You had your ear to the ground. You heard anybody in the field at all in the last few days? It's been pretty warm, and looks like it's going to get warmer next week.
Yeah, you hear a few guys here and there, but right around where we're at, we're pretty doggone wet still. So, I mean, about every tile in the countryside's running. So, you know, you get a little bit east of here, and then you have to go a fair ways north before you really get to areas where guys are working. But we're hearing about it nonetheless.
And your bids for the day?
Oh, cash corn, 641, fall would be 532, and then cash beans, 1314, and fall would be 1270.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Don.
That's Matt Bennett. He's with TGM in Windsor, Illinois. We'll say goodbye to some of our stations now. For the rest of you, stay with us for the weather.
Support for Stock and Commodity Reports on Illinois Public Media comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, now hosting risk management seminars. A complete list of seminars is at sfarmmarketing.com. We would like to thank these businesses for helping to make our 22nd annual All-Day Ag Outlook meeting in Covington a great success. Bates Commodities, Anderson's Incorporated, AgriGold Hybrids, and Wisconsin Plastic Drain Tile. We look forward to seeing you all again next year.
It's Farmers Day. It's also National Peanut Cluster Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1717, Abraham Darby died, a British ironmaster. He first successfully smelted iron ore with coke, a much cheaper fuel than coal. The iron quality permitted thin castings that competed with those of brass in making pots. In 1824, John Elder was born, a Scottish marine engineer. He developed the compound steam marine engine. His model divided the steam expansion into two cylinders so that each cycled through a smaller range of temperatures and pressures, which greatly improved fuel efficiency. In 1923, the Coca-Cola six-bottle carton was introduced. Coke's management hoped the new packaging would encourage people to take bottles of Coke home and drink it more often. The packaging was a huge hit with the public. And in 1992, Christian K. Nelson, inventor of the Eskimo Pie, died at the age of 99. Nelson says he received inspiration for the treat when a boy in a store was unable to decide whether to spend his limited money on ice cream or a chocolate bar. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media and comes to you from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
Meteorologist Pete Levitt on the phone line for a Thursday afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Pete. Tell me about the weather forecast, please.
Yes, good afternoon, Todd. Well, we've got cooler air whistling across the Midwest this afternoon. Cold front moved by earlier today, brought an end to some showers through almost all of Illinois, except there's still some rain going on in extreme southern areas. And it's going to clear out the rest of the state in a few hours, and we're going to have a fair and much cooler night than we saw this past 24 hours. And fair weather should stay with us through Friday into Saturday. It'll be rather cold. Temperatures get down into the 20s by Saturday morning. And then we start to warm up again. We get the weather temperatures rising again on Saturday night, Sunday. A little moisture starts creeping back up to the northeast later Sunday and maybe generates a few showers Sunday night in southern Illinois. And then as we move further ahead in the beginning of next week, we have one day of rainy weather, which is marking the return of warm and more moisture-laden air back in there for the first of next week. And finally, looking at the balance of next week, real warm. We've got temperatures coming right up through the 60s into the 70s, I think, by the time we get into the middle of next week, well above normal, 15 to 20 degrees above normal for this time of year.
That's amazing. It happens not very often, I suppose, that we get that much of a change in our March weather. Is that right?
Yeah, March, of course, is the month, you know, in like a lion, out like a lamb. And so it tells you there's a lot of conflict in what's going on meteorologically in March. And this particular year, we have extremely strong jet stream patterns, which has favored the severe weather that we've seen already this month, and also favors the rapid transition of weather from one character to another. So we're getting brisk winds bringing in the cooler air, and as fast as that air comes in, the winds shift to southwest, we get the warmer air back in, and that's typical March if you take the marchers that have a little bit more gumption than some of the other marchers we've seen that have been less, more lackadaisical, I should say.
Turn your attention to the southern hemisphere, Brazil and Argentina. The soybean crop is being harvested. Will they be able to move along quickly?
Well, they got quite a bit of rain, and as a matter of fact, some pretty heavy rains down in Rio Grande do Sul, up to 4 inches of rain down there this past week. They really did need some rain to set up a better moisture pattern for what follows after the end of the season, but I don't think that will be persisting. We should have a drier week for harvesting this coming week. We're going to see rain back in the north. The good news up in the northern part of southern Brazil is that they'll get the beans out in fairly dry weather, they'll be able to get a second corn crop in. I think there'll be enough moisture for the safrinha crop to go in. So that's a positive. And the Argentine finally got good and wet. So things are looking much better there.
Thanks so much, Pete.
Mm-hmm, my pleasure.
Pete Leavitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason from University of Illinois.